As President Trump scrambles to try to find some way out of the Iran war, he continues to send out people that he likes in front of the cameras to say things that are, well, charitably speaking, a little odd. He's also sending out other people, or maybe they're willingly going out on Fox News, because that's what President Trump spends apparently a great deal of his time watching, to try to encourage the president that he's doing the right thing, even though it's literally the opposite. Baghdad Bob comes to mind, if you remember him from the infamous time during the Persian Gulf War in 1991, where he kept telling everybody that would be willing to listen that there is all this stuff about the American invasion is all nonsense. There's no truth to it. There are no American tanks in Iraq. And then tanks literally rolled around the corner. You may remember that. Everybody mocks him for that. That is going to be the epithet, or at least the memory of what a lot of people take away. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are fighting for that title, but I'm going to show you one today that's, well, pretty bad. But we'll start off with that actual American official. Here is Secretary of State Marco Rubio trying to explain to people that there's a problem here, but it ain't our job. And to set this up, so you understand the context of what he's talking about, first of all, the Strait of Hormuz remains closed. 30 ships that were confirmed to have crossed. That's about 10 a day instead of the 100, 140 per day that is normal. And most of those are going through the Iranian route. Of course, none of that has changed because the Iranian side continues to say. In fact, it was a ship that was hit this morning, yet another one off the Omani coast. So the Iranian side continues to say, yeah, if you want to press the issue, we will not relent. So even as of this morning, another ship has been hit because Iran retains control of the Strait of Hormuz. But now then, as we've been talking about here recently, the Iran's Houthis have said that the maritime embargo against Saudi Arabia is escalating to threat to the oil market, as the Bab al-Mandab has now been closed to Saudi traffic. Now, I checked just a few minutes ago before coming on here, and the current status with that is there has been no ships attacked so far. There has been traffic going through, but not Saudi traffic. Apparently, they are trying to go elsewhere, and really the only elsewhere is going to be up north through the Suez Canal, or they are waiting for instructions to try to figure out what to do. But apparently, as of today, this is the first day after the Houthis have said they're going to close the strait in the Bab al-Mandab to Saudi traffic. So far, Saudi hasn't tried that. So it's going to be, we're going to wait and have to see what happens with it, because about 7 million barrels, somewhere between 4 and 7 million barrels per day, depending on the day, traffics through the Bab al-Mandab. So that's going to be a big problem. Saudi Arabia, some of their ships are trying to say, hey, we need some escort. Well, don't look to the United States for that escort, because apparently Marco Rubio said, ain't my job.
But other countries think we need to step up and provide, whether it's hardware or finances, to help carry that burden. It is not the United States' job to protect
people in the entire planet forever. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's acting like, hey, somebody came up and they're begging me to go help them. Well, hey, it ain't my job, man. We can't help these people forever. We can't do everything for them. Why is there a need for ships to be escorted, Mr. Secretary? Did that ever occur to you? Of course it does, and everybody else recognizes it too. But Secretary of State Rubio and nearly every official that goes on television for the United States pretends like this is something that was foisted upon us, like that we're just being asked to do all kinds of unreasonable things out of freeloaders and people who just want a free lunch or whatever. Not that it's because we cause a major global problem, a major economic catastrophe that's unfolding before our eyes right now. Because of the war we chose, that President Trump chose, that Secretary Rubio full-throatedly endorsed. And then now when there are consequences that affect a lot of our friends and allies around the world, he wants to mock them. Mock them. Hey, we can't do, you know, pay the price forever. It's like a parent's, and there's like a 34-year-old kid that's still living in the house, and the parent finally gets tired of you, said, hey man, y'all gonna have to move out. I can't be taking care of you forever. You got to be an adult at some point. Well, this is not that case. This is a case to where the parents in this case caused a problem and burned down the kid's house, and now then the kid has nowhere else to live except for in your basement. So kind of like that. That's the better analogy, I suppose. But listen, people around the world are not stupid. And this is building up more and more contempt for the United States, more anger at us. And even though right now people are still just having to grit their teeth because they know even with all this insanity and absurdity, we do still have a great deal of power. We have economic power. We have military power. So people haven't been running for the exits yet, but that's not that far off. You can see that from here because at some point the anger is going to be enough or the economic cost is going to be enough to where they're going to start looking elsewhere for help, elsewhere as in possibly Russia or China or anywhere else except for the United States. It's starting to become possible that even Europe can start saying, hey, you know what? You guys aren't getting, you're not helping us out any here. And in fact, not only are you not helping us out, you're now harming us to the point to where even by pulling off the disconnection would cost Europe a lot from the status quo. And in many cases, what they gain from it, at least what they perceive they gain. But the day is coming to where even Europe is going to finally say, you know what? It ain't worth it. We're going to move our own way, whether that's towards China or just amongst themselves remains to be seen. But the day that people calculate that it's a higher cost to work with America than it is to detach from America, they're going to do it. That day isn't here yet, but don't think that it won't come even for Europe. But for other folks around the world, that day is a lot sooner and coming faster than many people realize. Now, that's the official. So I'm gonna show you now here a fellow that's been on Fox News many times. I was on Fox News with him, even sometimes together many times in the past. Our paths crossed in the green room at Fox News many years ago, and he's from the Heritage Foundation, Jim Carafano. Now, in this, it's one thing to be trying to put a positive spin on things. A lot of people do that. I roll my eyes very oftentimes, but this one, this is otherworldly.
I know people are fixated by the losses, which are terrible, and how long this has taken, but our position in the region is the strongest that it's been since the end of World War II. I mean, we have been dealing with this from Jimmy Carter. Since the days of Jimmy Carter, we have never had a position in the region this strong to create a better future for the region. And then that means less trouble for us, less work for us, safer America. And I just think that this is it, the price we are paying. Trust me, it is going to pay off for decades.
Wow. Trust me? Oh, hell no. I won't trust you as far as I can throw you. I won't even trust you that far, however far it turned out to be. That is just insane. Not to say, hey, well, you know, I see the cost, you know, but someday it's going to be worth it. That's you can't disprove that, because if things happen in the future, then you can say, okay, maybe it's going to. So it's at least hypothetical that, okay, but someday in the distant future, maybe things will be better. You can argue that, not persuasively, but you can argue that. But holy crap. To instead argue that we are stronger now than we have ever been, or at least since World War II, the most powerful position we have ever been in. And trust me, folks, even in that distant future, it's going to be worth it. And I'm thinking, okay, let's just take him at face value and let's just review the facts, if you will, about what the situation is. Now, I just told you that the Persian Gulf is closed out through the Strait of Hormuz. So there's a dual blockades put back on again. Virtually nothing's getting out. A little bit of leakage is happening, 10 ships per day. Okay, so that means that the majority of the oil, gas, and everything else that's supposed to be coming out there is not. And now then we've added the Bab al-Mandab for Saudi Arabian oil, which is going to be potentially taking more oil off the global market, which is going to cause the price to go up and then everything that goes along with it. So only on those two things right there, you got to be thinking, wait, before we chose this war that you advocate and that you are still trying to convince me is a great deal, the Bab al-Mandab was open. No one had ever even talked about closing it. The Strait of Hormuz was open. International waterway, no one had any control at all. Didn't need to. Complete and total free flow. So just on that alone, you got to be saying, hang on, what? This is better than we've been since World War II? That's not where it stops. It's about to get a lot worse. Let's take a look, first of all, at our strategic petroleum reserve. Now, you see that President Biden had used a lot of this strategic petroleum reserve really for primarily political purposes during, I think it was the COVID period. Yeah, you can see during the COVID period, he used a lot of that. Which I thought was bad because that's not what the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is made for, just to make your political situation better by lowering the price of gasoline. I thought that was a bad use of it. But then we finally stopped that and it started going back up. And then now then, because of the war President Trump chose, we are now at the lowest point since 1983. And you see that indices on the far right is continuing to go down, and every day that the Strait of Hormuz is closed, that number is going to continue to drop, or we're going to stop exporting because that's primarily what we're doing. And then this global supply will be even more curtailed. Therefore, the price of a barrel of oil will go higher still. And then everything else on top of that doesn't seem like a stronger position than we were in World War II. We have in our air component that we have lost at least 42 aircraft and apparently another MQ-9 Reaper. So that's at least 43, and it may be higher than that because the Pentagon has not exactly been forthcoming on losses. But just look at all those aircraft that have been destroyed or damaged since this started, all because we chose this war that we didn't need to fight. That doesn't seem to have made our Air Force as strong as it's been since World War II. This one is one of the bigger ones. Iran attacks damaged 20 U.S. military sites so far. You see the date on that. That's June 1st. That's just the number of sites. And, of course, in this current tit for tat, the 10-day back and forth. And, by the way, Iran has already launched additional strikes on Kuwait today. So that continues on. And I'm sure that the U.S. will follow suit here later on. And it'll be day number 11, just without end. So we're going on back with that too. But every day the damage gets deeper and deeper to our bases. He was talking about since the days of Jimmy Carter, this nothing has been stronger. Look, the bases that we've had in the region were supposed to be to protect our assets in the region. Didn't protect anything. We couldn't protect ourselves. We couldn't protect anybody. And so now 20 of them are damaged, and that continues to go up by the day. We have the biggest issue of all, I think, other than the financial problem with the loss of the petroleum, is that we don't have enough missiles. We don't have enough missiles to return to all-out war. This is from the Telegraph, and numerous other places are talking about this because, and we've been telling you about this, and now it's been validated even in the mainstream media, the number of offensive missiles and defensive interceptor missiles are dangerously low. They already were. They didn't work the first time. That's primarily the JASSM and the Patriot. Tomahawk cruise missiles. Those things are running low. And I mean critically low. And all the things we fired on them, we blow up stuff every time, but it doesn't hit the things that matter the most, which, of course, I tell you over and over, is these underground missile cities. And those missiles that are running low, it takes forever to get them replaced. You see that the delivery time from the time, because basically every one of these missiles has to be handmade. There is no, you know, factory like you have you make a Ford F-150 or something and it's just rolling off the assembly line. That's not how it works. These are basically, as I told you yesterday, each of these are like mini rockets that has to be handcrafted to precise, incredible precision necessary for every component of this thing. And they all have to be done. And it takes, this is according to CSIS. I've seen some others that have it slightly less, especially for the Patriot there at the bottom. 3.9 million a pop, 28.7 million for the SM-3. That's a missile fired from an aircraft. You see, that's a 64 months here. But whatever the number actually is, it's huge. It is absolutely enormous. It takes forever. It'll take us years and years to replace all these things if we stop wasting them today. But we haven't. That's not the only issue. Because the Strait is closed down, here's one here. You talk about World War II. How about let's just go back to before things started ramping up for this war? Let's go to December 2025, and you see that the price of oil on that day was $59 on December the 1st, and the average in the month of December was $2.89 for a gallon of gasoline. Up in the upper right-hand corner, you see what it was before, just before we came on the air today at 7:22 this morning, $84. So a little bit higher, $25 higher, almost exactly. And that's what is so far. And then you see there in the lower right-hand corner, this is the gasoline price in America as of today, $4 a gallon. So from $2.89 to $4.01 as of today. So I don't know. That doesn't seem better or stronger to me. Maybe I'm just missing something here. That's also not the only issue. We also have a fertilizer crisis. The fertilizer scarcity will affect the harvest and the food supplies later this year and into next already. That's also not the only one. There's also some physical costs here. The Pentagon, through the Congress, is trying to get an additional $350 billion, primarily for the war in Iran. Now, that's on top of the $1 trillion defense budget we had to start this fiscal year. And now that we're going to get another $350 billion, and then we're trying to get an NDAA for the fiscal 27 defense budget of $1.15 trillion. Now, I think that a good chunk of that is just the members of the House trying to pull a fast one over on you to make it sound a little bit less bad than we're trying to get a defense budget of $1.5 trillion. And so they cut, they're trying to front load some with $350 billion now and then $1.15 trillion later on instead of that $1.5 altogether. Some of that is for supplemental for the cost we've already incurred here. But I don't know. That just doesn't seem like we're stronger now because we're having to spend $350 billion just in the last couple of months of this year because of all of this war of choice we made. And of course, the biggest cost of all is in our people. And so far, 18 American service members that we know of have been killed in action. There's a number of others that have been seriously wounded. And from reports that I have seen, many of them are in a critical care in Ramstein. And I'm sorry, not Ramstein, Landstuhl in Germany, and possibly several other places as well. And that number just keeps going up. Every day that we keep going with these tit-for-tat strikes and this continuing strike, there's always Iranian responses, and they keep hitting our bases, those 20 I mentioned ago. Does that sound like we're in the strongest position we've ever been in, all the way back to World War II? And he said that with such conviction. And I'm like, what are these people thinking? I mean, look, you look at the latest polling, and the American people aren't buying it. They are seeing through this stuff. I think I saw this morning that like 60-something percent, 69 if I'm not mistaken, of the American people do not think that President Trump is doing a good job on the Iran war. So they think he's doing a bad job. That's apparently the biggest negative for a war at this stage of the war since they've been tracking this stuff. Going back, I guess, to the Vietnam War, because most wars are popular at the beginning and then they go out over time. This is months in, and it's already hugely unpopular. And part of the reason is because people are like, we're not that stupid. You can't say we're the strongest here. We keep suffering all these casualties. Our finances are going into the toilet. You're throwing even more money at the defense. You're taking money out of our pockets with the embargoes because the strait is shut down, because the cost of the barrel of oil is up, and therefore the cost of gasoline, the cost of diesel, the cost of fertilizers, the cost of gasoline, everything. Everything is going up, and therefore because the means of production or transportation are going up, because everything in shipping and in trucking goes on diesel fuel, which is also going up. I think it's around $5 a gallon. Everything you buy will go up too. That doesn't sound like we're stronger than we've ever been, because we aren't. We're weaker than we've ever been. And this issue with the missiles, don't underestimate how big that is. We are putting our entire national security at risk, entire, because we are so low on the amount that we have, and we're still expending them day after day on targets that have nothing to do with ending the war. It just is punitive on Iran, and it hurts them and it kills some people. And somehow that's okay, even though it's getting rid of our inventories and making us at risk should we ever get into a war that's not our choice against like a China, a Russia, North Korea, something like this, somebody who's a peer or near peer. And we will need massive amounts of all of those missile systems. THAADs, PAC-3s, the JASMs, long-range cruise missiles, the Tomahawks, everything you want to look at, HIMARS, ATACMs. We're going to need all that stuff, and we keep throwing it all away because of the ego of President Trump. We're not stronger than we were since World War II. We have never been weaker than we are right now, quite to the contrary of what he's saying. Now, one last thing I want to share with you today, and one of the reasons why people are so unhappy with the United States and more people seeing through this this nonsense is, let me show you this. The New York Times had a piece out, I think this was yesterday is when it first came out, when we were talking about the troop casualties. It says that the Pentagon has been withheld announcing a lot of the casualties. We've had a lot more than what's being claimed. Now, that did not sit well with Assistant Secretary of War Sean Parnell, who came out in a scathing report on X and said the Department of War rejects these baseless and malicious accusations of hiding injury numbers as outright lies from partisan hacks of the New York Times who were desperate to smear America's military and leadership. It can't be that we want accurate information. No, it's got to be all this smear crap and whatever. The claims of concealment are fabrications meant to further distress the American people in the wake of three service members killed in action. Disgusting behavior, even for the New York Times. In fact, the U.S. military casualty information is publicly available and regularly updated online. Let's actually take a look at that because I think that we're going to see some information here. First of all, let me go back to something here. This is this was on June 22nd, and the Pentagon at that time was announcing that we had around 400 that had been wounded. Now, we have here, let's see if I pull this one up. We have, this is from yesterday's news also. Now that in the wake of all this, in the wake of this New York Times piece, the Pentagon has says nearly 100 U.S. troops injured in the last 2 weeks. Okay, that's 2 weeks. And let's see, I'm sorry. There we go. So the Pentagon says that 100 troops have been injured in the past 2 weeks because now then they're putting this information out there. So now then you see there were 400 on the 22nd of June, and now then just – so who knows how many between the 22nd of June and the 7th of July. We don't know, but some number since missiles were flying during much of that time. But that should be, as my math goes, that should be at least somewhere around 500, maybe a little bit more. But when you look today on that very publicly available defense casualty analysis system. It's updated online every day. Okay, so why am I looking, if it's too small for you to read, I'm sorry about that, but you see in the lower right-hand corner, total deaths from the Operation Epic Fury, 18 total deaths. And then in the lower right-hand corner, we see 447, and that's up from yesterday. I think it was 430-something yesterday, and now then today it's been updated to 447. How can it be 447 if we had 400 plus 100 equals 500 around there, and then now we've had more since then? So yesterday it was off by considerably more. So when he wants to just blast all of us for saying things that are not true and just trying to taint the what was the phrase he used? This is all about outright lies who were desperate to smear America and its leadership. No, Mr. Parnell, you're the one who's smearing the leadership because of stuff like this. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is smearing stuff. The President of the United States is smearing the leadership of our country. You guys cumulatively are throwing mud on yourselves as you're pointing fingers of condemnation at everybody else. Because it's self-evident that you're lying. You're not telling the truth at all. Because everyone can see it. We can count. We can see what's happening with all of these targets. We can see that we're getting hit every day. Fine, we're hitting Iran every day. But that is not hitting the targets, the only targets that matter, which is those missile cities with the drones and the missiles and their production capacity underneath the ground, which you can't reach. And instead of acknowledging reality, you're just throwing more and more of our missiles away at nothing, targets that don't even matter, that have nothing to do with our success or failure in the war. You're just losing more and more of our capacity, making us weaker and weaker, and putting us at more vulnerability to stronger countries in the event that we have to fight later in the future for our actual national security. That's what's going on. Americans see that. That's at least one of the reasons why they're so upset about this whole issue of trust, that we don't trust you, that the support for the war is so low, because we see it's pointless. I mean, you know, President Trump will just have to explain why he's casting such aspersions on himself and on the trust and validity of Americans in our own government, because he went to such lengths last year repeatedly to tell us how he obliterated all of the Iranian nuclear facilities and it would take them decades to recover, et cetera. And then, oh, well, actually, they were 2 weeks away, he said a couple of days ago, from having a nuclear weapon. That's why I had to strike. Well, you can't have it both ways, Mr. President. You can't, at one hand, tell people that you've obliterated and it'll take decades to recover. And then when it suits you in a moment, you'll tell them again, they were 2 weeks away. They weren't. And it wasn't obliterated back then anyway. It was damaged. But there is plenty of evidence, because they have the capacity. For all we know, the very thing that you claim this whole time, they use a canard, that this was all about preventing a nuclear weapon by Iran when they were never pursuing one, and we validated it even in 2026 and every year since 2003. Now then, the perverse part is, by all of this subterfuge and this foolish war of choice, not only all the costs that I've just laid out there, we may have given them the incentive to start a nuclear program. They, for all we know, they could be racing to a bomb as we speak. One day we may just see, get shocked and see there's a nuclear blast somewhere in some obscure test facility somewhere in the middle of an Iranian desert somewhere. That is entirely possible. Maybe it doesn't happen. Maybe they're still, because many in Iran say, well, we don't think that would be a good idea, because that's going to make everybody else go to the get a bomb, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, whatever. So they may be saying, all right, that's still not good. I don't know. I hope so. But you need to understand that one of the potential risks and potential consequences of what we've already done is we could have undermined that very thing. And then I'm telling you, the lie that President Trump tells so often about how the 2015 JCPOA enacted by then President Obama was a path to a bomb is as much of a lie as anything's even imaginable. It was the only thing that was agreed to that put severe constraints on Iran and would have stayed in effect at least until 2025, and in which case there would have been every incentive for everybody to continue following it indefinitely. Iran didn't want a bomb. They had no reason to have it. And if we had abided by the terms that we had signed there, we gave them incentive not to have a bomb. And if they do get one here, man, people will be looking back on that and giving just condemnation to President Trump for ever having gotten out of the one thing that we actually had them in an agreement. Not that they're negotiating, not that they're willing to, but that they were in an agreement that would have prevented that. And now then, because of this foolishness, not only have we lost our own troops, not only has it cost us hundreds of billions of dollars, not only is it costing, continuing present tense going into the future, higher cost than everything else, but it now may also undermine our national security in addition to the loss of missiles and making us vulnerable to any other would-be peer competitor. Now then, there's also a new nuclear state. That is the consequence. That is why I'm so emphatic pointing these things out. It is profoundly important that we get this thing shut off as soon as possible. And I went in today on something from one of our good friends, Joe Kent, who said yesterday that he thinks that in light of these casualties that we have, this really puts a strong point on why we need to get the war over now.
I've been trying to do so even more in the last 24, 48 hours since we've tragically taken more casualties, and the Iranians have once again proven that they can probably make this much worse for us. I'm afraid that if the president continues to double down, which it sounds like he's doing, we are going to face a mass casualty event.
So it could get a lot worse. And he's been saying on X that now is the time to do the walkaway plan, which, of course, we've been advocating from the beginning. And I certainly agree with Joe Kent right now. We need to get this war over with, because the casualties will continue to rise, because some of the times, one of these points, Iran is going to hit something even like a troop concentration or something. It's not just going to be three that die on a one shot. It could be quite a large number, or they could hit wherever the troops are living. Why they're still there, I don't know. But he is right. We need to get this war over with right now, before any more troops get killed, before they go to a nuclear weapon, and before we reach economic Armageddon, because the Bab al-Mandab and the Strait of Hormuz actually get shut off for Saudi and GCC oil, and we're in a lot of trouble. That's where we are right now, folks. Appreciate you being on. We got a number of shows coming up later today, so there's a lot to go. I think we have three more shows left of the day, so you're going to get all kinds of coverage today. We'll look forward to seeing you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe, hit that like button, and share this with somebody you love.